Finally, we have conquered Villa Famis. Well, conquer, not exactly, but we are at the summit of the town, exactly 390 meters above sea level. The castle of Villa Famis is a melting pot of cultures and historical events that we will now tell you about. So listen carefully as we begin. Long before the Muslims, Christians, Jaume I, or the Order of Montesa came to understand the strategic value of this town, it had already been inhabited. Bet you think we're exaggerating. No, not at all. Archaeological remains found near the current castle, and especially in the Abric del Castel, indicate that man has inhabited Villa Famis since the Iberian era, and even since the Copper Age, some 6,000 years ago. However, the current configuration, the one you are exploring, is more contemporary. Jaume I conquered Villa Famis in 1233. So, exactly who and what did he conquer? Surely a small Andalusian population that would live in this very environment. Keep in mind that the crypt of the Iglesia de la Sangre, the Church of the Blood, from which you have just come, was built over an aljibe, a cistern for the collection and storage of water. Muslim architecture. The population that Jaume I conquered was called Beni Ameth. In the 14th century, the Order of Montesa oversaw and controlled the entire area in Villa Famis. And it is during this century that this great palatial castle most likely was built. Now, let's take a little walk through the castle, so that you can have a look and imagine how some of these rooms must have looked. One of them, a large hall mounted on two floors, was surely prepared for the soldiers. We understand there to be two floors, due to the presence of those windows set at a greater height. Use your imagination to see what is missing. The planking, the access staircase, the upper floor itself, which would have been made of wood and... Well, you know, Father Time is unforgiving. There would have been different rooms and halls, all designed for specific uses within this fabulous fortress. The stables would have been at the entrance of the enclosure. And if we think about it, that's for the best, because we're certain that the odors wafting about were not of French perfume. And the view. Words cannot do it justice. The Sierra de Garcerán is at our feet, a view that today we can enjoy calmly, serenely. But the view you have now is the view they had from the castle, a view that was critical to their defense. This height seems perfect if you wish to spot the advancing enemy and defend against them, don't you think? All of the walls of the castle project the defensive character of the entire fortress, and they feature the most modern defense system of the time, the loopholes. These narrow triangular-shaped windows allowed the soldiers to keep a watch on things below and, above all, to fire arrows while remaining safe from the arrows of the enemy. And now, let's talk about the element that stands out most. The circular tower that seems to reign over the entire space. Attention! You now stand before one of the few defense towers of Carlist architecture in Spain. Be careful when accessing it from the left. The difficult access formed by the stones is one more feature of the defense of the square. On the way, you will also see the very modern water storage and collection system. This is an aljibe, a cistern from the time of the Order of Montesa. Inside the tower, you can imagine the missing ceiling and roofing of the various floors, as well as the access stairs to each level. Nonetheless, the mosaic of loopholes that articulate the entire construction and the various lookout posts make this tower a defensive superstar. this castle has long been coveted and fought over. So, would you like to hear about one of those battles? Great! That will make it easier to understand the construction of the circular tower. So, let's travel back in time to Spain, 1833. Extra! 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 My goodness! Fernando VII has died! And although in his time they called him the Desired One, the Golden Boy, now he is better known as the Boar, the Oaf, thanks to the great Nieves con Costrina. The heiress to the throne, his daughter, Isabel, has not even turned 3 years old. So the power of Spain falls to the regency of Maria Cristina, her mother. We imagine it might seem odd that the heiress to the throne was a 3-year-old girl. No worries, the origins of this mess can be explained. During the reign of little Fernando, there were two antagonistic political factions, the liberals and the defenders of the old regime. At the end of his reign, Fernando fell ill, and with one foot in the grave, he delegated his wife Maria Cristina as regent. The Queen Regent relied on the liberals, who approved of her daughter ruling following the death of her husband. The other faction, those enamored of the old regime, were not thrilled at this idea. They supported Don Carlos, the king's brother, as heir. And so the Carlists were born. Yes, clearly they didn't put much thought into their name. And how could the liberals and the Carlists solve their differences? Talking sure wasn't going to work it out. And that's how we come to the Carlist Wars. And where exactly does Vilafamés fit into all of this, you might ask? Well, prior to the Carlist Wars, Vilafamés was already on the side of the liberals. That is why, between the years 1837 and 1839, Vilafamés was besieged and attacked 3 times by one of the strongest of the Carlist strongmen in the region, Cabrera, the Tiger of the Maestrazgo. In the case of Vilafamés, you know that saying that the third time's the charm? Well, it was true. With the arrival of the Carlists to the city, the defensive tower you see before you was built, and the loopholes were installed. And with that last addition, the castle assumes that final look that you now see. And that's the end of the story. For now, of course, because we still have much more to tell you about Vilafamés. We'll be waiting for you at the next point of interest.